And hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 91 of the Carrier's Edge podcast. I'm Mark Morrell, president of Carrier's Edge, getting the side eye already from my normal co-host.
Jane Jezrowy, the other co-founder of Carrier's Edge.
And we have got lots to talk about today. Up first, of course, is an update on our road trip, which has
big
ended.
Trip.
When last we left off, we were in the middle of our large journey moving across the country, and we have arrived. So,
dun, dun, dun.
Yes, we've arrived with much fanfare in the western part of the country and the very far west part of the country, and it is fabulous.
Actually, we're almost the furthest west that you can go. There's just, almost. If you have to go to the other side of Victoria, or the other side of Vancouver Island, to actually be in the furthest part. And the biggest thing that I think, well, besides the fact that we are in mountains and ocean and all things glorious, but what I really notice is that we're in a different time zone than Eastern.
Things you learn very quickly when you're in the Pacific time is that nobody else cares about Pacific time.
Yes.
And people are booking you for all kinds of crazy ass early meetings. Yes.
Yeah. And 6 a.m. is a thing. Like, I didn't know it was a thing as much as and it's actually weird because it's not hard to be up at 6 a.m. right now. I don't know what's going
to
happen.
Because you're not used to it yet. We haven't fully switched our body clocks yet.
No, because we're going to go back to Ontario in 5 minutes and then we're going to be back on Eastern time. But yeah, the center of the country definitely has the corner, no, the market cornered on time zones. I did not have any clue about that when I was in Ontario, much like every privileged group on the planet. You don't realize how privileged you are until you're not. And then you look at everybody in Eastern and Central time zone and go, wow, you just have it so good.
So, yes, I will extend an apology to every person in Pacific time that I ever inadvertently booked into an early meeting.
Into a noon meeting or a 1 o'clock meeting and made it impossible for them to have lunch.
Yes, that's the other thing. It's not just the early meetings. It's all these afternoon meetings that run through lunch hour.
Yeah, and I didn't eat today. I mean, I ate breakfast, but I didn't eat lunch. I don't think I ate lunch. I don't even remember. That's how bad it is.
You just end up picking bits when you can grab 5 minutes away.
Yeah. And what's really terrible is that our staff that work here, like the members of our team who are in the Vancouver area, were exhibiting this. Like, we knew they were saying that they're trying to get something, like they're trying to get time to get something to eat. And I didn't notice.
We just figured they were working it out.
I just thought they just had too many meetings. they had bad time management. And no, it's not. It's actually, they just have an extra challenge of every single Ontario meeting is at lunchtime for them. It's crazy.
Yeah. So now I want to shift the official business hours to Pacific time and make all of those spoiled Eastern time people attend a meeting at 6 p.m. Horror of horrors.
Well, we're going to bring it up at our staff meeting and see what they think about, you know, maybe throwing us specific people a bone once in a while and having a meeting at 7 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
But
so
never occurred really to me.
Yeah, it's really been an eye opener. Well, and it's funny because you assume that there is a part of the island here or a part of the culture here that is awake past 8 p.m. You have to assume that there are people that are up, that there's, I guess, people that are used to it, that are here all the time. They get on that clock and they can stay up to 10 p.m. or something crazy like that.
That's not us. We
are. And they're not getting
up. We are
up
now
at 5.
Officially 80 years old and going to bed at 4 p.m.
Yes.
We are often not going to bed after it's actually dark. It's really sad. Yeah, it's very bad. What I think is that the people who are on Pacific time all the time are probably fine.
Yeah.
It's the people who are trying to adapt Eastern that
or
are
the people that have a
Central.
Lot of interactions in Eastern time. So I think there's lots of people around here that work and live and do everything in Pacific time, and they never really interact with anybody in other time zones. So it's not an issue for them. And we talked to people when we were moving in. We talked to people that were part of the moving crew and other groups like that, that really hadn't spent much time in Eastern Canada at all. So they're only out here. Their whole world is here. And that's what they're used to. So I aspire to be that.
Well, you'll never be that. Sorry. Mm. You're always going to be from the East.
Yeah.
And now I can say that I moved out here, but I'm originally from Alberta. So I'm actually a Westerner. So I can keep up the pretense that I am a Westerner. And I am a Westerner at heart. I love it out here. I think it's great. So mountains and ocean agree with me. So what else did you want to talk about in terms of the trip?
Well, I was going to talk about any other highlights from the trip, because the second half was just as adventurous as the first half.
It was.
And so we had, after our last episode, we had the other half of the prairies, which extend for a long period. You can see for miles and miles and miles. It's really interesting. It's super flat, like everyone says, but I did not find it boring. I didn't find that to be a boring drive. And as much as it extends for a really long distance, it was like one day, maybe a day and a half, and we were through that. So you go through it.
One of the things that I'm just looking at some of my pictures, one of the things, this was in Regina. We were going through Regina and we had to stop, like, you know, every once in a while, we had to stop to charge our car, as we talked about already. But we stopped at a charger that was, it's never in the best place in a parking lot. The chargers are always kind of inconvenient. And this one was.
We talked about that in the dismal locations for the chargers. But that's something that we really noticed once we got into the mountains. The chargers are in much nicer places.
Yes.
But then when you're surrounded by mountains, everything looks nicer anyway.
It doesn't matter. You're not even thinking, you're just thinking mountains. Wow.
Yeah.
But we stopped at a Canadian Tire in Regina and we started noticing big differences. Mm-hmm. And one of the big differences, and you do not see this in the Southern Ontario Canadian Tires, is stuffed mammals.
Yeah. Actual bears. Yeah. Stuffed and on display.
The stuffed bears, like not even one, two.
Yeah. Multiple, and, like real bears and full size. That had been trophies from some hunter that got stuffed and are on display there. So very different.
Canadian Tire.
Yeah, and a regular retail store.
We were sad and took pictures of it to send to our kids because they, just like, look, stuffed things. And they also, the kayaks and stuff hanging from the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this was all new to us because, in the Newmarket Canadian Tire, you're not getting any of that.
In the suburbs, you have a much smaller display of that. But when you get into areas where they have lots of outdoor living, you've got a lot of those things. So
I'm sure that up north in Toronto, in cottage country, in Ontario, they have things like that. But I've never seen this in a Canadian Tire. So that was, I thought that was kind of cool.
And one of the other things that we thought was cool that we took a bunch of pictures of is all the logging trucks, which you don't see as much. When you're in the suburban areas or in the cities, you're not seeing a lot of the logging trucks. So it was
You're seeing zero.
Zero.
Zero so logging trucks.
Really enjoyed seeing some of those going by and taking some pictures of that. And then the excitement for us is we got to take the ferry over to the island. I gotta say, it was a pretty good travel experience.
Yeah. I think people get sick of it. But of course, in your first time on the ferry, it's like for us, it's, excitement and taking pictures and stuff like that. And there were people who were having fun. I think I could see it getting to be a pain if you need to get somewhere relatively quickly, or I don't know. I don't see us getting sick of it, but
I compared it to other forms of mass transit. So you think about that. It's a little bit like the train or the planes where you've got to come and check in at a certain time, check in a bit early, stand in line or park your car in the lineup and wait to be told where to go. And for us, it was a pretty good experience. We hung around when we were told to go forward. We did. We got parked. The ferry itself has got pretty decent amenities, has a gift shop, of course, and we had a good experience.
And apparently the restaurant has gotten an overhaul and
that's the
big
terminal
news.
Here. Yes. You can get
big
hot
news
soup.
In Victoria.
Yes. Yes. Anything that you can put boiling water into, they now have for sale at their ferry terminal. Big excitement. Yep. So we made it across.
I've never driven on a ferry. So
it
was, I've watched ferries load and unload, but I've never actually moved my own vehicle onto one. So it was a nice, it was a good experience. And we are very obedient travelers. Like we are not, we are trying to find out the rules and follow them. So we had a good ferry experience, but mostly because I think we're orderly.
Yes, the ferry is well suited to people who are orderly. You will park at the right place, the right distance behind the people, get out of their cars and leave them and go and sit in the lounges and then come back to your car when you're required to and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, we had a very good experience there. And so we have arrived. We've now been here for a week and a half. Oh boy, you know what? It's actually been 2 weeks since we got here. Because we got here and got the keys, and then it was nearly another week before we actually got our furniture.
Can we talk about the mountains? Like, can we talk about driving through the mountains first?
We can definitely talk about driving through the mountains.
Because yes, driving through the mountains too. Was crazy. Well, first of all, I was like, hey, the speed limit is 120 here.
Yeah.
What the hell?
And that's the speed limit, highest speed limit in North America that we've seen.
I know. And it's on the mountains. So I don't think you went 120.
A couple of times. Every once in a while, kind of going down the hill, I might, but not very much, no.
But there were, so the speed limiters kind of ended in Manitoba, or was it in Alberta? Like the trucks weren't being limited. They weren't governed.
No, I don't
outside of Ontario.
Yeah.
So that was like, that's when the trucks started speeding up. And sometimes they were going a little obnoxiously fast, especially through the prairies. They were going pretty fast. And we saw a couple that we were behind with who were swinging a little bit off the road. Like they weren't looking
not
like,
all perfectly controlled.
No. But then we got into the mountains and some trucks were going really fast. And apparently we talked to a couple of the locals who we're friends with, and they're saying that in the winter, it can be really, really dangerous because trucks don't always, they're not always driving to conditions.
Yeah. And some of those are pretty steep grades, 6, 7, 8%.
A couple of eight. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty steep hill.
And the other
thing, we definitely noticed it going down those hills. We certainly noticed it. I mean, maybe this is what you were about to mention, but it was crazy how our electric car actually gained a charge because it was going down the hill so much, and the regeneration just was so effective. So much downhill momentum that you actually charge your battery on the way down.
Yep. The other thing that I wanted to mention was if we put it on auto steer so that. So this is how I know that autonomous vehicles are not ready for prime time, because when we're going up and down the mountains and Mark had auto steer enabled, every once in a while, if a truck or if a vehicle was coming down the hill coming down the opposite hill while we were going down the hill, like in the opposite direction, the car thought it was coming to hit us and would stop.
Yeah, we were talking about that in the last episode because we had that same issue in Ontario when we were going around the hills and the curves there. And so that the auto speed really was not happy in those situations. And auto steer that you were using on the highways and the straight parts of the prairies, really did not like some of that. They always wanted to move far too much into the center for undivided highways and things. And usually we want to keep to the side, you know, into the center or towards the right side of the lane in undivided highways. But that auto steer was going right towards the center.
Yeah, there were things that we did not like that the car wanted to do. So the car was not allowed to do anything. Yes. We took the car's privileges away.
Yeah.
Like no more auto steer for you.
Well, and one of the things that we did experience that has come up in the news this week, on a less positive note, is that horrible crash in Manitoba where the truck hit the bus full of seniors.
Yeah.
And we had been down that road not too long before that. So we fully understand what was happening there in that situation. And I think we might have even talked about this in the last episode, the important intersections that you get a sign in advance that says important intersection and the speed limit drops a little bit. But you see these people that are at that cross street and you're always wondering, are they going to try and go for it?
Yeah.
And most of the time, well, we didn't see anybody that cut it close at all. They were all very conservative for us. But there's a lot of time where you can see them kind of getting ready to go and they're starting to inch forward. And you always wonder, are they going to try? they're going to go for it. So,
oh yeah,
unfortunately, it looks like that happened.
I was quite freaked out by that when we were driving along, and I remember talking about that in the last podcast because I did not like that at all. And I can see someone being distracted and just kind of going out in the intersection because there's a lot of, it's just the same. You're just like driving along the same thing. And once those roads become familiar and you're in your risk, you're not sensitive to risk anymore, then I can see how easily it could be to have a very bad accident.
Yeah. And this one, unfortunately, is really bad, but you can see where it comes from.
Actually, speaking of accidents, and this is, something that I was talking to Mike Frolick of Transpro Freight Systems, had a call with him earlier, and he was talking about the tankers that have been, I don't know if they're exploding or catching on fire or, you know, because there's been a couple in Toronto, and there's one in, I can't remember what state it was in.
Philadelphia.
Well, Mike decided to go right into the weeds, and he's wondering if maybe terrorists are testing out the if we blow up a tanker under a bridge, can we destroy some infrastructure? He said, you know, just think about it. Just think about it. Are the terrorists coming for the bridges through tankers? I don't know. I think it was he was kind of kidding.
Well, I think while you bring it up, we have to have a shout out to Mike,
yes,
who was the this year's recipient,
Claire
C. Casey Safety Professional of the Year with the TCA. Got that honor last week at their safety conference that we unfortunately couldn't be at because of our move, but looks like it was a great event, and good to see Mike getting that recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. See, this is why he won the award. He is so safe. He's thinking about, you know, vehicles that aren't even the ones that his company runs.
Yeah. Okay.
But way to go, Mike.
Yes.
Great job.
And I think that, yeah, so that I think sort of brings us around to the main issue that I thought we should talk about, that now the cat is out of the bag, and that we are not going to be producing Best Fleets to Drive For in partnership with truckload carriers anymore. That agreement is ending, and the program will become a standalone program that we run. So this is something that we have been sort of looking at for a long time. Months now.
Well, why,
we've not why been able to say anything, but yes. Yesterday TCA made the announcement about the ending of that agreement, and sort of basically with this year's edition winding down that partnership, and they are going to go in a different direction, their own thing. I don't know what that's going to look like, but we are going to be continuing to do what we do and move Best Fleets into some other areas that we really have not been able to expand into as much as we would have liked to.
What areas would those be, Mark?
Well, the thing that's been on our mind for at least the last year is that it is a real high percentage of participants in the truckload space.
Yeah.
And we really want this program to be the best fleets to drive for, not the best truckload fleets to drive for. So we need to get more participation from LTL carriers, from tanker carriers, the ones that aren't blowing up bridges, of course, the bulk haulers, all of those different people. We need to find ways to get more of them involved and to really expand that program. And that is always going to be a challenge when you're so tightly associated with the voice of truckload. And TCA has spent a long time in the past, a lot of effort in the past few years, really focusing on being the voice of the truckload industry and branding themselves that way and lobbying. And so it's us saying, well, we want to actually go away from truckload, or we want to have as much non-truckload as we have truckload in there. Those two things were sort of in conflict. So we want to make sure that all of these other non-truckload fleets know that they are eligible to participate. They can do very well in the program. We know they've got some great stuff that they're doing for their drivers, and we want to get more of them participating.
And it gives us an opportunity to expand not just the eligibility for the, although they were always eligible. So it was, it's not like we're changing the eligibility, but what we are doing is we're able to promote it more to non-truckload carriers. But it also gives us the opportunity to start tweaking the program the way we do and try and figure out what is distinct about LTL. So what makes an LTL fleet a good one to drive for? Is that different than truckload? My suspicion is that it's not that different. But what does LTL have as an advantage? What does tanker fleet, what do tanker fleets have as an advantage? Do they have different ways of dealing with retention issues? What do their, like, you know, how do they select equipment? Like, what the kinds of things that are there, the things that make kind of box them in, or they can have more freedom with, like, what kinds of decisions are directing how they run their businesses?
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't really thought about it much, but yeah, it's going to be really going to be quite an adventure for us to start poking into that. Like all of the ways that we've been tweaking the program every year are based on the information that's coming in and what we're seeing. And when so much of those participants are on the truckload segment, we are skewing the kind of questions that we are starting to ask. And I'm really looking forward to being able to expand that, to talk more about things like when you're doing multiple picks and drops in a day, how do you make that better for drivers? So maybe it is less about the long haul stuff, about, you know, what are you doing about parking and all of those things that we've asked for recent years because it's been a big issue. But what are the things that are the big issues on the LTL side? What are the things that come up when you're doing all of these different deliveries in a day that you have to consider? And when you're doing more in-town work, how do you handle like traffic and things like that, and different considerations? And on the tanker side, yeah, they have a whole different approach to deliveries and, you know, number of stops that they're doing and things like that. Bulk haulers, the car carrier people, livestock. We want to get all of those fleets in there. One of the things that I like about the Best Fleets program is we kind of strip away the things that are really kind of the minutiae that don't make that much of a difference. Because people have said in the beginning, oh, how can you compare a van or a reefer with a flatbed? And they're totally different kinds of business. And we said, yeah, but these other things are common. Do you have a voice in the business? Do you feel like you have a career path? Are you getting treated well? Are you getting your performance managed effectively? Like all of those things that are common across all the different segments. And I think those things will all still be there, but there are definitely going to be things where we start asking different questions. And by asking some of those different questions, we'll also have the opportunity to start poking in areas where those questions aren't obvious. So a question that we add for LTL might actually start getting some of the truckload people to think differently about what they're doing, because they're not thinking about that stuff because it hasn't come up yet.
Yep.
But we know some of the more proactive fleets will start looking at it and saying, huh, how can I do that here? And vice versa, right? There will be LTL fleets that are starting to do some of the things that truckload people do. So I think it's going to be really interesting assessment. The scoring is going to be quite exciting this year. And you said it gives us an opportunity to sort of promote more. The nature of our agreement with TCA was always that we run the program and they do the promotion of it. So it kind of tied our hands a little bit into how much we could get out there and be sort of pushing for more nominations or expanding the applicant or nomination pool, all of those kind of things. And now we're able to start doing more of that. And yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. I think I'm looking forward to seeing. It is exciting.
It is exciting. So I think that it'll take a little while for people to realize that it's not a truckload thing. But I think that once, it may take a year or so, but I think that once it gets going, it's going to really give us a lot of insight into what is actually happening out there and what drivers think is valuable. And, you know, it's what the things that we normally look for and report on and, you know, talk about the trends and the data that we get.
Yeah, well, I think we have that opportunity now to promote that and make it clear that it is open to everybody. And that's kind of the nature of working with an association, is that people always assume that it's really what you're doing is only for the association members.
Yeah.
And so if you're not in that segment, they assume that it doesn't apply to them. So just being on its own and not being tied to an association, I think we will see more people that start considering it. And if we do our job and make it clear that they've got as good a shot as anybody, we know that they've got great programs for their drivers and there's a good opportunity for them to showcase it. And as soon as we get a couple of bulk carriers or LTL or something sort of non-traditional on that top 20 list, it's going to draw some attention.
Yeah.
And if we have an overall winner, that would be awesome to have like a car carrier that was an overall winner or something.
Totally forgot what I was going to say.
I bowled you over with my
You did.
Idea.
You bowled me over. Yeah, I can't remember now at all. So moving on. What's next? How much do we talk about our plans for the program? Because we have them.
Yeah. So as far as the actual Best Fleets program, Best Fleets 2024, very little of that is going to change. The nominations will open after Labor Day the way they have. The interview process, the questionnaire, all of that will continue the same as it is. We will add some questions in there to make it even harder, to make it more of a pain for people, explore some different areas, ask things about what people are doing. Driver survey is going to be the same, scoring. The only thing that really is going to change is where we present the overall winners, where we present the top 20 and give out the overall winner awards. And we have been working on that and do not have an announcement at this time, but we'll have an announcement. We'll have more details as we get to the nomination period. So
excellent.
We definitely will be looking to do the same kind of award presentation that we've done. But one of the things that we now have more opportunity to do is expand the education part around that. So when we were giving out the awards at the TCA convention, there were obviously limits on how much time we could take up to share the data and talk about trends and best practices and all of that stuff. So we started doing webinars in the past couple of years for that, and that's helped a little bit, but that's still a webinar. You have to still have to limit it a little bit. You can only grind people into a webinar so much. You can't have a 4-hour long webinar every day for a week or anything like that. So we always have way more information than we've been able to share through these other channels. So we're going to take advantage of the fact that we now have a little bit more freedom in some of those areas and more opportunity to share that without stepping on somebody else's agenda, without stepping on somebody else's schedule and their programs and all of that stuff. So we will have more to say about it, but it's going to be very exciting for the future. Mm-hmm. That is for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I had something on the tip of my tongue that I was going to say, and I completely lost it. Now I'm just blanking.
Well, we will go into another discussion, and at a random moment, it will come back to you.
Well, okay. So I usually have my Remarkable, and I write these things down when you're talking.
No, you don't. You usually sit there having your coffee, playing a video game while I'm talking.
I don't.
I've watched you in other
episodes. Okay, I've played a video game.
Maybe that's the problem, is you're not playing a video game right now.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, is that it's hard to focus, and I have thoughts that I want to say, and then I completely forget them. And it was about Best Fleets, and it was about the new program, and it's about new quest. Okay. So here it is. The thing that I forgot to say was about the opportunity that fleets have to learn about themselves.
Oh, yes.
And this is, I think, the most important part of the program. And it's something that, I don't know, I try to bring it up quite a bit, but there is an immense opportunity for a company, and I'm not just talking about a fleet, like any company. If you ask yourself a series of questions about how you're performing in a variety of different areas, and you answer those questions honestly, and then get feedback on those answers, and you act on that feedback, you're going to improve. It's that cycle of continuous mm-hmm. improvement, but you have to engage in the actual writing down of what you're doing, get feedback on whatever the programs are and then act on it. You have to do those three steps. And I think one of the things that fleets find most valuable about the Best Fleets program, even when they aren't on the top 20, even when, you know, they're last in the list, they have the opportunity to look at their answers and think about what they want to do better. And there's always that cycle of self-improvement that's an opportunity in the Best Fleets that I think is not as, it's not as granular and it's not as specific in other programs. Like we ask very specific questions and they're very specifically directed at what are you doing for your drivers? What actual things do drivers get from this program? And if you answer that, or if you try and answer and you don't have anything that you come up with, or your answer is a generic open door policy type of thing, then you know that there's something, that there's a gap there. And if you can fill in those gaps, you get better as a company. And that, I think, is what the top 20 value and the Hall of Fame absolutely values.
Yeah, well, that is kind of the life cycle of a Best Fleet I see, that a lot of times people come into it and their first year in the program, that is the kind of answer they give to a lot of questions, is very general. And you know, we believe that communication matters. So we have an open door and we treat drivers like family, like those kind of things. And then they go through it and they look at their responses. And certainly the ones that are interested in getting better, they look at their responses and look at the scores. And then they look at what other people are doing. And from that, they can then say, okay, we need to say this. We need to describe it like this. We need to get specific. And through that, they learn their own story. They figure out how to tell their own story. And over the course of a couple of years of doing that, they can go from being a finalist, to being a fleet to watch, to being a top 20. And I always find that process really fascinating to watch. The people that are very diligent, you really see that progression happening. And I actually had one of those today. I was doing a consultation. And it was funny because we give out the fleet report and we offer the consultation, and it's just a chance to go through and talk about specifics. And we talk about what other people are doing. We find things where there's sort of gaps and opportunities. And then we talk about what other fleets are doing that tends to be working pretty well. And from there, they can get some ideas and think about what they might want to do. And so this company, because I'm still getting used to the time change, see earlier section on time changes, I started up, we go into a Zoom and I share the screen and I pull up the report and we start going through it. I had the wrong report. I had last year's report up. So I didn't have somebody else. I had the right company, but I had the wrong year. So I'd somehow grabbed the 2022 report. So I could look at their scores and I'd gone through and scanned through it and looked at what I wanted to talk about. And then they're like, "Yeah, I think that's last year's report." I'm like, "Oh, crap, it is." So I get that, close it out, pull out the proper report. And immediately I can see the differences in the scores and where they're doing, you know, how they're doing this year compared to last year. And as I'm looking through their answers, I can see all of the places where they've added new things or they've made changes or where they've clarified what it is they're doing. But what was also really interesting is that it wasn't just me talking for the whole time. So sometimes we go into these consultations and people are like, "Well, take us through it, what you saw, or do you tell us?" And that's fine. So we go through the things that we've noted and, you know, we talk about where there may be opportunity. But this case was different. This was somebody who had gone through that questionnaire, looked at the book, looked at all the scores and had a list of questions. So in this question here, we got this. What would it take to get this score? What were people doing that got them this score? And what is the full point score? What does that look like in a fleet? And if we had done this, what would that get us? Like really specific, nice. Really kind of meticulous review of those things, which tells me that there's somebody who's thinking about it, looking at not just what they're doing, but how they describe it, how they consider it internally, and what they might be able to do in the future that is entirely based on what other fleets are doing that's working well. And that is sort of the model of how to be a best fleet, basically.
It's important to understand that it's really a self-reflection process.
Yeah.
It's not us telling you what you should be doing or not doing. It's us telling you what everybody else is doing or what the good fleets are, you know, the ones who are doing better are doing. And then you make your own decisions.
Yeah.
I think that the top 20 or the Hall of, if you look at the Hall of Fame, I think they are an interesting case study because they're not the same company. Like they're definitely, they haul, they have different things that they haul. They have different types of runs. They have different length of haul. They are in different parts of North America, but they all have, and actually how they do things is very different. Like if you look at Prime with their driver meetings every day that they do online as well, or, and then you look at Bison that does their, well, they used to do this. I can't remember if they do it anymore, but they have their huddles because they're, you know, their huddles every morning that invite drivers. And then you look at a smaller company like FTC and how they incorporate driver feedback. They're all very different because they're all very different. They all have different characters, but they're all trying to follow the best practices for their company. And the way they get to those best practices is just by this process of, okay, what are we doing? What do people think? Are there any ideas out there? What could we do better?
Yeah, that process can be really valuable. And the granularity of the evaluation that we go through does make it easier to have that conversation. Because like today, I was getting grilled on some random question about why is this a 2 and not a 3? You know, and we have those kind of answers.
Yeah, because we talk about it when we're scoring. We go through that process and go, is this a 2 or is this a 3? And what does a 2 look like? And what does a 3 look like? Like, it is not a, give me a 2.
And what was interesting about that today is one of the questions was one where we would have looked at it and gone, which way should it go? And fell on the side of one particular score because they were talking about something that they were doing, but they were just about to change into something totally different. And so like this year, after a year of doing that new program, it would basically be a full point score. But last year they were just starting it. So it was definitely not a full point score, but we kind of gave them a bit of something because they were about to do it and we knew they were about to do it. So that's the kind of challenge that comes up regularly in the scoring as well. We see that there's something happened, but it just started or they're just launching it next week or whatever. So you can't really give them points for it, but you have to acknowledge that they're doing something. There's an effort there. Yeah, the endless grind of all of these questions. So that that is, even for the fleet, that's part of the process. And as we go through the consultation, we talk about not just the opportunities, but also look at the reality is there's things that they're doing that they just didn't say, that they just didn't come out. Even though they have this lengthy questionnaire and we do an interview, there's still stuff that gets missed. There's still stuff that doesn't get captured. So we have the discussion and it's not uncommon to have it come up that they are actually doing a bunch more than what they said and or what we captured through there. So there's that part of the process.
It's not a one-time only process. That's the thing is that you have to keep having the conversation. And the fleets who do it on a regular basis get better and better and better at making sure that everything is covered. But when you first start in the program, it's like, you know, okay, well, what are we going to say on this blank question that we have no, like they don't have any information about how to do it. Well, they do have information on how to do it, but they don't know if they're doing it right until they get scored. We do the interview and they get some feedback, but there's only so much you can do in an hour and a half.
Well, even though we do the interview with them, there are certainly times where we think we've captured it until we get to the scoring. And then we realize, we didn't really get it. Or everybody went in a different direction. So we end up having to change the scoring and realize that something isn't captured. But that process, and I say this to people regularly, that is the process of figuring out what your story is as a company and being able to tell that story. And it really isn't about the Best Fleets program. Yeah, that's fine. You make the list and you learn from it and you get a trophy or whatever. But the value is being able to clearly articulate what makes you different as a company, because drivers are going to come up and say, why should I work there? And it isn't just how much can I make here? What else are you doing? What makes you different? What makes you a destination as a driver? And what kind of driver is going to be successful there? What kind of driver is going to be ideal? You know, and once you figure out what that story is and how to tell it, you've got a great answer to that question. This is who we are as a business. If you're looking for these things, we're a good fit. If you're not looking for these, let's save each other some headaches, just go your separate ways, right?
I wanted to, a couple things that I wanted to say is that we got a message from a long time, well, they haven't been, his company hasn't been on the top 20 for a long time, but his company was the first to hit 10 years. And he said, the best fleets program you developed, plain old worked. It just works. If you keep doing this, you will get better. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really, and it's not like we didn't make it up. Mm-hmm. We didn't make up this process. Looking at your, you know, this self-analysis and learning to tell your story and continually modifying it little by little by little is how you get to excellence, which is why we have the Hall of Fame, because those companies just, because they've reached that point of excellence, because they've developed this habit of little improvements all the time, it's really, really hard to catch them. It's hard to come and beat them, because they have a developed a, it's kind of in their DNA now. They know how to do it. They're not going to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like they're going to, you know, immediately start treating their drivers like pulling programs that are popular with their drivers. Like, they're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. It's going to, and one of our other best fleets said that it's like an ISO program. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as you're doing this continuous evaluation and improvement and doing these little changes over and over again. Mm-hmm. And the second thing, I forget what I was going to say.
Well, that's
I have
okay.
Too many thoughts in my head and they don't come out properly.
Well, we're coming up, I think, on time, but I will say, looking toward the future, we are actually back in Toronto next week for the Collision Tech Conference, which is always
colliding.
Collision of ideas. And this year it seems to all be about AI, because there's got to be 20 different sessions, 30 different sessions that are AI this, AI that. And I'm already sick of people talking about how they've added AI into their product and how it's so much better. Ugh. As we discussed last time, AI is not ready for prime time yet. But there are lots of other things that look good at the at that conference. However, this is the end of our season for the Best Fleets.
No,
this is not the Best Fleets podcast. This is the Carrier's Edge podcast.
Yes.
This is the end of our season for this, yes. Yeah, we start in September with our season and go to June, and we have come to the end of, I don't even know what season it is. I'm going to say six. Feels like maybe six.
I don't know.
So, yes, that I think is a good place for us to wrap up. So, everybody have a great summer, and we will see you in the fall with more tales of life on the West Coast.
Have a good day. Talk to you later. Have a good summer. Thank you.